The months melted together for Arlen as he fell into a familiar routine. Reagan's manse was closer to the library, so he slept there most nights. The messenger's leg had mended quickly, and he was soon on the road again. Alyssa encouraged him to treat the room as his own and seemed to take a special pleasure at seeing it cluttered with Arlen's tools and books. The servants loved his presence as well, claiming Lady Alyssa was less of a trial when he was about. Arlen would rise an hour before the sun and practice his spear forms by lamplight in the manse's high-ceilinged foyer. When the sun broke the horizon, he slipped into the yard for an hour of target practice and riding. This was followed by a hurried breakfast with Alyssa and Reagan when he was about, before he was off to the library. It was still early when he arrived, the library empty save for Ronald's acolytes, who slept in cells beneath the great building. These kept their distance, intimidated by Arlen, who thought nothing of walking up to their master and speaking without summons or permission. There was a small, isolated room designated as his workshop. It was just big enough for a pair of bookcases, his workbench, and whatever piece of furniture he was working on. One of the cases was filled with paints, brushes, and etching tools. The other was filled with borrowed books. The floor was covered in curled wood shavings, blotched from spilled paint and lacquer. Arlen took an hour each morning to read, then reluctantly put his book away and got to work. For weeks, he warded nothing but chairs. Then he moved on to benches. The job took even longer than expected, but Arlen didn't mind. Mary's face became a welcome sight over these months, sticking her head into his workshop frequently to share a smile or a bit of gossip before scurrying off to resume her duties. Arlen had thought the interruptions from his work and study would grow tiresome, but the opposite proved true. He looked forward to seeing her, even finding his attention wandering on days when she did not visit with her usual frequency. They shared lunches on the library's broad roof, overlooking the city and the mountains beyond. Mary was different from any girl Arlen had ever known. The daughter of the Duke's librarian and chief historian, she was possibly the most educated girl in the city, and Arlen found he could learn as much by talking to her as in the pages of any book. But her position was a lonely one. The acolytes were even more intimidated by her than they were by Arlen, and there was no one else her age in the library. Mary was perfectly comfortable arguing with gray-bearded scholars, but around Arlen, she seemed shy and unsure of herself.
The sun's triumphant rise.
Creator Jake, it's as if you haven't practiced at all.
Don't be cruel, Arlen. Your song was lovely, Jake.
Then why are you covering your ears too, Mary?
Well, my father says music and dancing lead to sin, so I couldn't listen. But I'm sure it was very beautiful. Try your juggling.
Are you sure it's not a sin to watch juggling?
Only if it's good.
Jake's lute was old and worn, never seeming to have all its strings at one time. He set it down and pulled colored wooden balls from the small sack he kept his jongleur's equipment in. The paint was chipped, and there were cracks in the wood. He put one ball into the air, then another, and a third. He held that number for several seconds.
Oh, much better.
Watch this.
Jake reached for a fourth ball. The balls came crashing down to the cobblestones.
Maybe I should practice more with three.
You should practice more.
My dad doesn't like it. He says, if you've nothing to do but juggle, boy, I'll find some chores for you.
My father does that when he catches me dancing.
They looked at Arlen expectantly.
My dad used to do that too.
But not Master Cobb?
Why should he? I do all he asks.
Then when do you find time to practice messengering?
I make time.
How?
Get up earlier, stay up later, sneak away after meals, whatever you need to do. Or would you rather stay a miller your whole life?
There's nothing wrong with being a miller, Arlen.
No, he's right. If this is what I want, I have to work harder. I'll practice more.
Don't worry. If you can't entertain the villagers in the hamlets, you can earn your keep scaring off the demons on the road with your singing.
Jake's eyes narrowed. Jake began throwing his juggling balls at Arlen.
Oh, good jongler could hit me.
You're reaching too far.
To illustrate Cobb's point, Reagan let go one hand from his shield and gripped Arlen's spear just below the tip before he could retract it. He yanked, and the overbalanced boy went crashing into the snow.
Reagan, be careful! You'll hurt him!
Alyssa clutched her shawl tightly in the chill morning air.
He's far gentler than a corling would be, lady. The purpose of the long spear is to hold the demons back at a distance while retreating. It's a defensive weapon. Messengers who get too aggressive with them, like young Arlen here, end up dead. I've seen it happen. There was one time on the road to Lacton,
Arlen scowled. Cobb was a good teacher, but he tended to punctuate his lessons with grisly stories of the demise of other messengers. His intent was to discourage, but his words had the opposite effect, only strengthening Arlen's resolve to succeed where those before him had failed. He picked himself up and set his feet more firmly this time, his weight on his heels.
Enough with the long spears. Let's try the short ones.
Alyssa frowned as Arlen placed the 8-foot-long spear on a rack, and he and Reagan selected shorter ones, barely 3 feet long, with points measuring a third of their length. They were designed for close-quarter fighting, stabbing instead of jabbing. He selected a shield as well, and the two of them once again faced off in the snow. Arlen was taller now, broader of the shoulder, 15 years old with a lean, wiry strength. He was dressed in Reagan's old leather armor. It was big on him, but he was fast growing into it.
What is the point of this? It's not like he's ever going to get that close to a demon and live to see what can happen. And animals, with Corlings killing the slowest and weakest, only the strongest predators remain.
Arlen! What do you do if you're attacked by a bear?
Long spear to the throat, retreat while it bleeds, then strike the vitals when it lowers its guard.
What else can you do?
Lie still. Bears seldom attack the dead.
The lion?
Medium spear. Stab to the shoulder joint and brace as the cat impales itself. Then stab with a short spear to the chest or side as available.
Wolf!
Ugh, I can't listen to any more of this.
Alyssa stormed off towards the manse.
A good whack to the snout with the medium spear will usually drive off a lone wolf. Failing that, use the same tactics as for lions.
What if there's a pack of them?
Wolves fear fire.
And if you encounter a boar?
I should run like all the core is after me.
Arlen awoke on top of a pile of books. For a moment, he wondered where he was, realizing finally that he had fallen asleep in the library again. He looked out the window, seeing that it was well past dark. He craned his head up, making out the ghostly shape of a wind demon as it passed far above. Alyssa would be upset. The histories he had been reading were ancient, dating back to the age of science. They told of the kingdoms of the old world, Albanon, Thesa, Great Lim, and Rusk, and spoke of seas, enormous lakes spanning impossible distances, with yet more kingdoms on the far side. It was staggering. If the books were to be believed, the world was bigger than he had ever imagined. He paged through the open book he had collapsed upon and was surprised to find a map. As his eyes scanned the place names, they widened. There, plain as could be, was the Duchy of Milne. He looked closer and saw the river that Fort Milne used for much of its fresh water and the mountains that stood at its back. Right there was a small star marking the capital. He flipped a few pages, reading about ancient Milne. Then, as now, it was a mining and quarrying city, with vassalage spanning dozens of miles. Duke Milne's territory included many towns and villages, ending at the dividing river, the border of the lands held by Duke Angiers. Arlen remembered his own journey, and traced back west to the ruins he had found, learning that they had belonged to the Earl of Newkirk. Almost shaking with excitement, Arlen looked further and found what he had been looking for, a small waterway opening into a lake. The Barony of Tibbet. Tibbet, Newkirk, and the others had paid tribute to Milne, who, in turn with Duke Angiers, owed fealty to the King of Thesa.
Thesians? We're all Thesians.
He took out a pen and began to copy the map.
That name is not to be spoken again by either of you.
But
you think this wasn't known? His Grace has ordered anyone speaking the name of Thesa arrested. Do you want to spend years breaking rocks in his mines?
Why? What harm could it bring?
Before the Duke closed the library, some people were obsessed with Thesa, and with soliciting monies to hire messengers to contact lost dots on the maps.
What's wrong with that?
The king is 3 centuries dead, Arlen, and the Dukes will make war before they bend knee to anyone but themselves. Talk of reunification reminds people of things they ought not remember.
Better to pretend that the walls of Milne are the entire world?
Until the Creator forgives us and sends his deliverer to end the plague.
Forgives us for what? What plague?
Ronald looked at Arlen, his eyes a mix of shock and indignation. For a moment, Arlen thought the tender might strike him. He steeled himself for the blow. Instead, Ronald turned to his daughter.
Can he really not know?
Mary nodded.
The tender in Tibbetts Brook was unconventional.
Ah, I remember. He was an acolyte whose master was Cord and never completed his training. We always meant to send someone new. This cannot stand. What plague indeed.
Arlen took this as a cue to edge for the door.
Not so fast, you two. I'm very disappointed in you both. I know Cobb is not a religious man, Arlen, but this level of negligence is really quite unforgivable. And you, young lady, you knew this and did nothing?
I'm sorry, Father.
As well you should be.
Ronald drew a thick volume from his desk and handed it to his daughter.
Teach him. If Arlen doesn't know the book back and forth in a month, I'll take a strap to both of you.
Mary took the book, and both of them scampered out as quickly as possible.
We got off pretty easy.
Too easy. Father was right. I should have said something sooner.
Don't worry about it. It's just a book. I'll have it read by morning.
It's not just a book. It's the word of the Creator, as penned by the first deliverer.
Honest word?
It's not enough to read it. You have to live it every day. It's a guide to bring humanity from the sin that brought about the plague.
What plague?
The demons, of course. The Corlings.
Arlen sat on the library's roof a few days later, his eyes closed.
And man again became prideful and bold, turning against Creator and Deliverer. He chose not to honor him who gave life, turning his back upon morality. Man's science became his new religion, replacing prayer with machine and chemic. Healing those meant to die, he thought himself equal to his maker. Brother fought brother, to benefit none. Evil lacking without, it grew within, taking seed in the hearts and souls of men, blackening what was once pure and white. And so the Creator, in his wisdom, called down a plague upon his lost children, opening the core once again to show man the error of his ways. And so it shall be, until the day he sends the Deliverer anew. For when the Deliverer cleanses man, Corlings will have naught to feed upon. And lo, ye shall know the Deliverer, for he shall be marked upon his bare flesh, and the demons will not abide the sight, and they shall flee terrified before him.
Very good.
Can I ask you something?
Of course.
Do you really believe that? Tender Harrell always says the Deliverer was just a man, a great general, but only a man. Cobb and Reagan say so too.
You best not let my father hear you say that.
Do you believe the Corlings are our own fault? That we deserve them?
Of course I believe. It is the word of the Creator.
No, it's a book. Books are written by men. If the Creator wanted to tell us something, why would he use a book and not write on the sky with fire?
It's hard sometimes to believe there's a Creator up there, watching. But how could it be otherwise? The world didn't create itself. What power would wards hold without a will behind creation?
And the plague?
The histories tell of terrible wars. Maybe we did deserve it.
Deserve it? My ma'am did not deserve to die because of some stupid war fought centuries ago.
Oh, your mother was taken? Oh, Arlen, I had no idea.
Oh. Arlen yanked his arm away.
It makes no difference.
Arlen stormed towards the door.
I have wards to carve, though I hardly see the point. If we all deserve demons in our beds.
Leisha bent in the garden, selecting the day's herbs. Some she pulled from the soil, root and stalk. Others she snapped off a few leaves or used her thumbnail to pop a bud from its stem. She was proud of the garden behind Bruna's hut. The crone was too old for the work of maintaining the small plot, and Darcy had failed to make the hard soil yield. But Leisha had the touch. Now many of the herbs that she and Bruna had once spent hours searching for in the wild grew just outside their door, safe within the ward posts.
You've a sharp mind and a green thumb. You'll be a better gatherer than I before long.
The pride those words gave Leisha was a new feeling. She might never match Bruna, but the old woman was not one for kind words or empty compliment. She saw something in Leisha that others hadn't, and the girl did not want to disappoint. Her basket filled, Leisha rose to her feet, brushed herself down, and headed towards the hut, if it could even be called a hut anymore. Ernie had refused to see his daughter live in squalor, sending carpenters and roofers to shore up the weak walls and replace the frayed thatch. Soon there was little left that was not new, and additions had more than doubled the structure's size. Bruna had grumbled about all the noise as the men worked, but her wheezing had eased now that the cold and wet were sealed outside. With Leisha caring for her, the old woman seemed to be getting stronger with the passing years, not weaker. Leisha, too, was glad the work was completed. The men had begun looking at her differently towards the end. Time had given Leisha her mother's lush figure. It was something she had always wanted, but it seemed less of an advantage now. The men in town watched her hungrily, and the rumors of her dallying with Jared, though years gone, still sat in the back of many minds, making more than one man think she might be receptive to a lewd, whispered offer. Most of these were dissuaded with a frown, and a few with slaps. Evan had required a puff of pepper and stinkweed to remind him of his pregnant bride. A fistful of the blinding powder was now one of many things Leisha kept in the multitude of pockets in her apron and skirts. Of course, even if she had been interested in any of the men in town, Jared made sure none could get close to her. Any man other than Ernie caught talking to Leisha about more than herb gathering received a harsh reminder that in the burly woodcutter's mind, she was still promised. Even child Jonah broke out in a sweat whenever Leisha so much as greeted him. Her apprenticeship would be over soon. 7 years and a day had seemed an eternity when Bruna had said it, but the years had flown, and the end was but days away. Already Leisha went alone each day to call upon those in town that needed an herb gatherer service, asking Bruna's advice only very rarely, when the need was dire. Bruna needed her rest.
The Duke judges an herb gatherer's skill by whether more babies are delivered than people die each year. But focus on what's in between. And a year from now, the people of Cutter's Hollow won't know how they ever got along without you.
Those words had proven true enough. Bruna brought her everywhere from that moment on, ignoring the request of any for privacy. Having cared for the unborn of most of the women in town, and having brewed palm tea for half the rest, they were soon paying Leisha every courtesy and revealing all the failings of their bodies to her without a thought. But for all that, she was still an outsider. The women talked as if she were invisible, blabbing every secret in the village as freely as if she were no more than a pillow in the night.
And so you are. It's not for you to judge their lives, only their health. When you put on that pocketed apron, you swear to hold your peace no matter what you hear. An herb gatherer needs trust to do her work, and trust must be earned. No secret should ever pass your lips, unless keeping it prevents your healing another.
So Leisha held her tongue, and the women had come to trust her. Once the women were hers, the men soon followed, often with their women prodding at their back. But the apron kept them away all the same. Leisha knew what almost every man in the village looked like unclothed, but had never been intimate. And the women might sing her praises and send her gifts, but there was not a one she could tell her own secrets to. Yet, despite all, Leisha had been far happier in the last 7 years than she was in the 13 before. Bruna's world was much wider than the one she had been groomed for by her mother. There was grief when she was forced to close someone's eyes, but there was also the joy of pulling a child from its mother and sparking its first cries with a firm squat. Soon her apprenticeship would be over, and Bruna would retire for good. To hear her speak it, she would not live long after that. The thought terrified Leisha in more ways than one. Bruna was her shield and her spear, her impenetrable ward against the town. What would she do without that ward? Leisha did not have it in her to dominate as Bruna had, barking orders and striking fools. And without Bruna, who would she have that spoke to her as a person and not an herb gatherer? Who would weather her tears and witness her doubt? For doubt was a breach of trust as well. People depended on confidence from their herb gatherer. In her most private thoughts, there was even more. Cutter's Hollow seemed small to her now. The doors unlocked by Bruna's lessons were not easily closed, a constant reminder not of what she knew, but of how much she did not. Without Bruna, that journey would end. Leisha saw Bruna at the table.
Good morning. I didn't expect you up so early. I would have made tea before going into the garden.
She set her basket down and looked to the fire, seeing the steaming kettle near to boil.
I'm old, but not so blind and crippled I can't make my own tea.
Of course not. You're fit enough to swing an axe alongside the cutters.
The years together had not softened Bruna's tone, but Leisha seldom noticed it now, hearing only the affection behind the old woman's grumbling, and responding in kind.
You were out gathering early today. I can still smell the demon stink in the air.
Only you could be surrounded with fresh flowers and complain of the stink.
Don't change the subject.
A messenger came last night. I heard the horn.
Not a moment before sundown, too. Reckless.
Bruna, what have I told you about spitting inside the house?
You told me this is my ripping home and I can spit where I please.
I was sure I said something else.
Not if you're smarter than your bosom makes people think.
Leisha let her jaw drop in mock indignation, but she was used to far worse from the old woman. Bruna did and said as she pleased, and no one could tell her differently.
So, it's the messenger that has you up and about so early. Hoping it's the handsome one? What's his name? The one that makes puppy eyes at you?
More like wolf eyes.
That can be good, too.
Leisha shook her head and rose to clear the table.
What's his name?
It's not like that.
I'm too old for this dance, girl. Name?
Merrick.
Shall I brew a pot of palm tea for young Merrick's visit?
Is that all anyone thinks about? I like talking to him, that's all.
I'm not so blind I can't see that boy has more on his mind than talk.
Oh? How many fingers am I holding up?
Not a one. I've been around long enough to know that trick. Just as I know Maverick the Messenger hasn't made eye contact with you once in all your talks.
His name is Merrick. And he does, too.
Only if he doesn't have a clear view of your neckline.
Oh, you're impossible!
No cause for shame. If I had paps like yours, I'd flaunt them, too.
I do not flaunt.
Aha! That will be young Master Merrick. You'd best hurry and print.
It's not like that!
I'll put that tea on, just in case.
Leisha threw a rag at the old woman and stuck out her tongue, moving towards the door. Outside on the porch, she smiled in spite of herself as she waited for the messenger. Bruna pushed her to find a man early as much as her mother did, but the crone did it out of love. She wanted only for Leisha to be happy, and Leisha loved her dearly for it. But despite the old woman's teasing, Leisha was more interested in the letters Merrick carried than his wolf eyes. Ever since she was young, she had loved messenger days. Cutter's Hollow was a little place, but it was on the road between three major cities and a dozen hamlets, and between the Hollow's timber and Ernie's paper, it was a strong part of the region's economy. Messengers visited the Hollow at least twice a month, and while most mail was left with Smith, they delivered to Ernie and Bruna personally, frequently waiting for replies. Bruna corresponded with gatherers in Forts Risen and Angiers, Lacton, and several hamlets. As the crone's eyesight failed, the task of reading the letters and penning Bruna's replies fell to Leisha. Even from afar, Bruna commanded respect. Indeed, most of the herb gatherers in the area had been students of hers at one time or another. Her advice was frequently sought to cure ailments beyond others' experience, and offers to send her apprentices came with every messenger. No one wished for her knowledge to pass from the world.
I'm too old to break in another novice.
Leisha would pen a polite refusal, something she had gotten quite used to. All this gave Leisha many opportunities to talk with messengers. Most of them leered at her, it was true, or tried to impress her with tales of the free cities. Merrick was one of those. But the messengers' tales struck a chord with Leisha. Their intent might have been to charm their way into her skirts, but the pictures their words painted stayed with her in her dreams. She longed to walk the docks of Lacton, see the great warded fields of Fort Risen, or catch a glimpse of Angiers, the forest fortress, to read their books and meet their herb gatherers. There were other guardians of knowledge of the old world, if she dared seek them out. She smiled as Merrick came into view. Even a ways off, she knew his gait, legs slightly bowed from a life spent on horseback. The messenger was Angerian, barely as tall as Leisha at 5'7", but there was a lean hardness about him, and Leisha hadn't exaggerated about his wolf eyes. They roved with predatory calm, searching for threats and prey.
Hi, Leisha!
Leisha lifted her hand in greeting.
Do you really need to carry that thing in broad day?
Leisha indicated the spear.
What if there was a wolf? How would I defend you?
We don't see a lot of wolves in Cutter's Hollow.
Merrick had longish brown hair and eyes the color of tree bark. She couldn't deny that he was handsome.
A bear, then. Or a lion. There are many kinds of predator in the world.
Merrick was eyeing her cleavage.
Of that, I am well aware.
Leisha adjusted her shawl to cover the exposed flesh.
Shawls have gone out of style. None of the women in Angiers or Risen wear them anymore.
I'll wager their dresses have higher necks, or their men more subtlety.
High necks? I could bring you a high-necked Angerian dress.
When would I ever have cause to wear that?
Come to Angiers. Wear it there.
I would like that.
Perhaps you will get the chance.
The messenger bowed and swept his arm to indicate that Leisha should enter the hut before him. Bruna was back in her chair when they entered. Merrick went to her and bowed low.
Young Master Merrick, what a pleasant surprise.
I bring greetings from Mistress Giselle of Angiers. She begs your aid in a troubling case.
Merrick reached into his bag and produced a roll of paper tied with stout string. Bruna motioned for Leisha to take the letter and sat back closing her eyes as her apprentice began to read.
Honor Bruna, greetings from Fort Angiers in the year 32 AR.
Giselle yapped like a dog when she was my apprentice and she writes the same way. I won't live forever. Skip to the case.
Leisha scanned the page with a flick of her eyes, flipping it over and scanning the back as well. She was on to the second sheet before she found what she was looking for.
A boy, 10 years old, brought into the hospital by his mother, complaining of nausea and weakness. No other symptoms or history of illness. Given grim root, water, and bed rest. Symptoms increased over 3 days, with the addition of rash on arms, legs, and chest. Grim root raised to 3 ounces over the course of several days. Symptoms worsened, adding fever and hard white boils growing out of the rash. Salves had no effect. Vomiting followed. Given heart leaf and poppy for the pain, soft milk for the stomach. No appetite. Does not appear to be contagious.
Bruna sat for a long while, digesting the words. She looked at Merrick.
Have you seen the boy?
Yes.
Was he sweating?
He was, but shivering too, like he was both hot and cold.
Mm-hmm. What color were his fingernails?
Fingernail color.
Get smart with me and you'll regret it.
Merrick blanched and nodded. The old woman questioned him a few minutes more, grunting occasionally at his responses. Messengers were known for their sharp memories and keen observation, and Bruna did not seem to doubt him. Finally, she waved him into silence.
Anything else of note in the letter?
She wants to send you another apprentice. I have an apprentice vicar who has almost completed her training, as your letters tell to you. If you are not willing to accept a novice, please consider an exchange of adepts.
I didn't tell you to stop reading.
Vicar is most promising and well-equipped to see to the needs of Cutter's Hollow, as well as look after and learn from wise Bruna. Surely Leisha, too, could learn much ministering to the sick in my hospital. Please, I beg, let one more, at least, benefit from wise Bruna before she passes from this world.
I will think on this a while before I reply. Go to your rounds in town, girl. We'll speak on this when you return. Merrick, you'll have a response tomorrow. Leisha will see to your payment.
The messenger bowed and backed out of the house as Bruna sat back and closed her eyes. Leisha could feel her heart racing, but she knew better than to interrupt the crone as she sifted through the many decades of her memory for a way to treat the boy. She collected her basket and left to make her rounds. Merrick was waiting for her when Leisha came outside.
You knew what was in that letter all along.
Of course. I was there when she penned it.
But you said nothing.
I offered you a high-necked dress, and that offer still stands.
We'll see.
Leisha smiled, holding out a pouch of coins.
Your payment?
I'd rather you pay me with a kiss.
You flatter me to say my kisses are worth more than gold.
I fear to disappoint.
My dear, if I braved the demons of the night all the way from Angiers and back and returned with but a kiss from you, I would be the envy of every messenger ever to pass through Cutter's Hollow.
Well, in that case, I think I'll keep my kisses a little longer in hopes of a better price.
Oh, you cut me to the quick.
Leisha tossed him the pouch, and he caught it deftly.
May I at least have the honor of escorting the herb gatherer into town?
Merrick made a leg and held out his arm for her to take. Leisha smiled in spite of herself.
I don't think we're there yet, but you may carry my basket.
Leisha hooked the basket on his outstretched arm and headed towards town, leaving him staring after her. Smith's Market was bustling by the time they reached town. Leisha liked to select early, before the best produce was gone, and place her order with Doug the Butcher before making her rounds.
Good morning, Leisha.
Yon Gray was the oldest man in Cutter's Hollow. His gray beard, a point of pride, was longer than most women's hair. Once a burly cutter, Yon had lost most of his bulk in his latter years and now leaned heavily on his cane.
Good morning, Yon. How are the joints?
Pain me still, especially the hands. Barely hold my cane some days.
Yet you find it in you to pinch me whenever I turn round.
To an old man like me, girly, that's worth any pain.
Leisha reached into her basket, pulling forth a small jar.
It's well I made you more sweet salve, then. You saved me the need to bring it by.
You're always welcome to come by and help apply.
Yon was a dirty old man, but Leisha liked him well enough. Living with Bruna had taught her that the eccentricities of age were a small price to pay for having a lifetime of experience to draw upon.
You'll just have to manage yourself, I'm afraid.
Well, you think on it.
Yon looked to Merrick before taking his leave, giving a nod of respect.
Messenger.
Merrick nodded back, and the old man moved off. Everyone at the market had a kind word of greeting for Leisha, and she stopped to ask after the health of each, always working, even while shopping. Though she and Bruna had plenty of money from selling flame sticks and the like, no one would take so much as a clat in return for her selections. Bruna asked no money for healing, and no one asked money of her for anything else. Merrick stood protectively close as she squeezed fruit and vegetables with a practiced hand. He drew stares, but Leisha thought it was as much because he was with her than it was the presence of a stranger at market. Messengers were common enough in Cutter's Hollow. She caught the eye of Keet, Steffi's son, if not Smith's. The boy was nearly 11 and looked more and more like tender Michelle with each passing day. Stephanie had kept her side of the bargain over the years and not spoken ill of Leisha since she was apprenticed. Her secret was safe as far as Bruna was concerned, but for the life of her, Leisha could not see how Smith failed to see the truth staring at him from the supper table each night. She beckoned, and Keith came running.
Bring this bag to Bruna once your chores allow.
Leisha handed him her selections. She smiled at him and secretly pressed a clat into his hand. Keith grinned widely at the gift. Adults would never take money from an herb gatherer, but Leisha always slipped children something for extra service. The lacquered wooden coin from Angiers was the main currency in Cutter's Hollow and would buy Rosalind sweets for Keet and his siblings when the next messenger came. She was ready to leave when she saw Mary and moved to greet her. Her friend had been busy over the years. Three children clung to her skirts now. A young glassblower named Ben had left Angiers to find his fortune in Lacton or Fort Rison. He had stopped in the hollow to ply his trade and raise a few more clats before the next leg of the journey, but then he met Mary, and those plans dissolved like sugar in tea. Now Ben plied his trade in Mary's father's barn, and business was brisk. He bought bags of sand from messengers out of Fort Crasia and turned them into things of both function and beauty. The hollow had never had a blower before, and everyone wanted glass of their own. Leisha, too, was pleased by the development, and soon had Ben making the delicate components of distilleries shown in Bruna's books, allowing her to leach the strength from herbs and brew cures far more powerful than the hollow had ever seen. Soon after, Ben and Mary wed, and before long, Leisha was pulling their first child from between Mary's legs. Two more had followed in short order, and Leisha loved each like it was her own. She had been honored to tears when they named their youngest after her.
Good morning.
Good morning, Leisha.
Mary dipped in a curtsy. Leisha bit back a frown. She and Mary had stayed close over the years, but Mary looked at her differently now that she wore the pocketed apron, and nothing seemed able to change that. The curtsy seemed ingrained. Still, Leisha treasured her friendship. Sarah came secretly to Bruna's hut, begging palm tea, but their relationship ended there. To hear the women in town tell it, Sarah kept well enough entertained. Half the men in the village supposedly knocked on her door at one time or another, and she always had more money than the sewing she and her mother took in could bring. Brianne was even worse in some ways. She had not spoken to Leisha in the last 7 years, but had a bad word to say about her to everyone else. She had taken to seeing Darcy for her cures, and her dalliances with Evan had quickly given her a round belly. When Tender Michelle had challenged her, she had named Evan the father, rather than face the town alone. Evan had married Brianne with her father's pitchfork at his back and her brother's to either side, and had committed himself to making her and their son Callan miserable ever since. Brianne had proven a fit mother and wife, but she never lost the weight she had put on during her pregnancy, and Leisha knew personally how Evan's eyes and hands wandered. Gossip had him knocking frequently on Sarah's door.
Good morning, Mary. Have you met Messenger Merrick?
Leisha turned to introduce the man, only to find he was no longer at her back.
Oh, no.
Leisha saw him facing off with Jared across the market. At 15, Garrett had been bigger than any man in the village save his father. Now at 22, he was gigantic, close to 7 feet of packed muscle, hardened by long days at the axe. It was said he must have Milanese blood, for no Angerian had ever been so large. Word of his lie had spread throughout the village, and since then the girls had kept their distance, afraid to be alone with him. Perhaps that was why he still coveted Leisha. Perhaps he would have done so regardless. But Jared had not learned the lessons of the past. His ego had grown with his muscles, and now he was the bully everyone had known he would be. The boys that used to tease him now jumped at his every word, and if he was cruel to them, he was a terror to all others, especially any unwise enough to cast their eyes upon Leisha. Jared waited for her still, acting as if Leisha were going to come to her senses one day and realize she belonged with him. Any attempt to convince him otherwise had been met with wood-headed stubbornness.
You're not local, so maybe you haven't heard that Leisha's spoken for.
Jared loomed over the messenger like a grown man over a young boy, but Merrick didn't flinch or move at Jared's poke. He stood stark still, his wolf eyes never leaving Jared's. Leisha prayed he had the sense not to engage.
Not according to her!
Leisha started moving towards them, but already a crowd was forming around the men, denying her a clear path. She wished she had Bruna's stick to help her clear the way.
Well, did she say the words promised you, messenger? She did to me.
So I've heard. I've also heard you're the only fool in the Hollow who thinks those words mean a calling's piss after you've betrayed her.
Jared grabbed at the messenger, but Merrick was quicker, stepping smoothly to the side and snapping up his spear, thrusting the butt right between the woodcutter's eyes. Merrick planted his spear back on the ground, standing over Jared, his wolf eyes coldly confident.
I could have used the point. You would do well to remember that. Leisha speaks for herself.
Everyone in the crowd was gawking, but Leisha continued her desperate push forward, knowing Jared and knowing that it was not over.
Stop this idiocy!
Merrick glanced at her, and Jared used that moment to grab the end of his spear. The messenger's attention snapped back, and he gripped the shaft with both hands to pull the spear free. It was the last thing he should have done. His corded arms flexed, and Merrick found himself flying through the air. Jared snapped the 6-foot spear in half like a twig.
See how you fight when you're not hiding behind a spear.
Jared, no!
Leisha pushed past the last of the onlookers and grabbed his arm.
Stop!
No other man will have you. You'll have me, or you'll end up shriveled and alone like Bruna.
Jared stalked towards Merrick, who was only just getting his legs under him. Jared swung a meaty fist at the messenger. But again, Merrick was quicker. He ducked the blow smoothly, landing 2 quick punches to Jared's body before retreating. They repeated the exchange, this time with Merrick punching Jared full in the nose.
Is that your best?
After a few moments, Merrick withdrew, standing in a cat-like fighting stance, his fists up and ready. His knuckles were skinned. Jared seemed little the worse for wear. For the first time, there was fear in Merrick's wolf eyes.
That all you have?
The messenger came at him again. Then Jared's thick fingers found purchase on his shoulder, gripping hard. The messenger tried to pull back out of reach, but he was held fast. Jared drove his fist into the messenger's stomach.
Not so smug now, are you?
Merrick rose to his hands and knees, struggling to rise, but Jared kicked him hard in the stomach. Leisha was darting forward by then as Jared knelt on top of Merrick, landing heavy blows.
Leisha is mine! And anyone says otherwise, we'll...
Leisha threw a full fist of Bruna's blinding powder in his face. She scowled and shoved past the gawkers.
Our vows are broken, now and forever. I will never be your wife, even if it means dying shriveled and alone. I'd soon as marry a Corlin.
She moved over to Merrick, kneeling and helping him to sit up. She took a clean cloth and daubed at the blood on his face. Already he was starting to swell and bruise.
I guess we showed him, huh?
Leisha poured some of the harsh alcohol Smith brewed in his basement onto the cloth.
Serve you right. You could have walked away from that fight, and you should have, whether you could have won or not. I didn't need your protection, and I'm no more likely to give my affection to a man who thinks picking a fight is going to gain the favor of an herb gatherer than I am the town bully.
He was the one that started it.
I'm disappointed in you, Master Merrick. I thought messengers came smarter than that. Take him to his room at Smith's.
Some nearby men moved quickly to obey. Most folk in Cutter's Hollow did these days.
If you're out of your bed before tomorrow morning, I'll hear of it and be even more cross with you.
Merrick smiled weakly as the men helped him away.
That was amazing.
Leisha had returned for her basket of herbs.
It was nothing but stupidity that needed stopping.
Nothing? Two men locked together like bulls, and all you had to do to stop them was throw a handful of herbs.
Hurting with herbs is easy. It's healing with them that's hard.
It was well past high sun by the time Leisha finished her rounds and made it back to Bruna's hut.
How are the children?
Well enough. Jan Gray's joints still ache, but his mind is as young as ever. I gave him fresh sweet salve. Smith remains abed, but his cough is lessening. I think the worst is past.
Leisha went on, describing her rounds, while the crone nodded silently. Bruna would stop her if she had comment. She seldom did anymore.
Is that all? What of the excitement young Keith tells me went on in the market this morning?
Idiocy is more like it.
Oh, boys will be boys, even when they're men. It sounds like you dealt with it well enough.
Bruna, they could have killed each other.
Oh, fall! You're not the first pretty girl to have men fight over her. You may not believe it, but when I was your age, a few bones were broken on my account as well.
You were never my age. Jan Gray says they called you hag when he was first learning to walk.
Sure they did. But there was a time before then when my paps were as full and smooth as yours, and men fought like corlings to suckle them.
Leisha looked hard at Bruna, trying to peel back the years and see the woman she had been, but it was a hopeless task. Even with all the exaggerations and tampweed tales taken into account, Bruna was a century old at least. She would never say for sure, answering simply,
I quit counting at 100.
Whenever pressed.
In any event, Merrick might be a bit swollen in the face, but he'll have no reason not to be on the road tomorrow.
That's well.
So, you have a cure for Mistress Giselle's young charge?
What would you tell her to do with the boy?
I'm sure I don't know.
Are you? I'm not. Come now, what would you tell Giselle if you were me? Don't pretend you haven't thought about it.
The Grimroot likely interacted poorly with the boy's system. He needs to be taken off it, and the boils will need to be lanced and drained. Of course, that still leaves his original illness. The fever and nausea could just be a chill, but the dilated eyes and vomit hint at more. I would try monk leaf with lady's brooch and ground adder bark, titrated carefully over a week at least.
Bruna looked at her a long time.
Huh. Pack your things and say your goodbyes. You'll bring that advice to Giselle personally.
Every afternoon, without fail, Ernie came up the path to Bruna's hut. The Hollow had 6 warders, each with an apprentice, but Ernie did not trust his daughter's safety to anyone else. The little papermaker was the best warder in Cutter's Hollow, and everyone knew it. Often, he brought gifts his messengers had secured from far-off places, books and herbs and hand-sewn lace. But gifts were not why Leisha looked forward to his visits. She slept better behind her father's strong wards, and seeing him happy these last 7 years was greater than any gift. Elena still caused him grief, of course, but not on the scale she once had. But today, as Leisha watched the sun across the sky, she found herself dreading her father's visit. This was going to hurt him deeply, and her as well. Ernie was a well of support and love that she drew upon whenever things grew too hard for her. What would she do in Angiers without him, without Bruna? Would any there see past her pocketed apron? But whatever her fears about loneliness in Angiers, they paled against her greatest fear, that once she tasted the wider world, she would never want to return to Cutter's Hollow. It wasn't until she saw her father coming up the path that Leisha realized she'd been crying. She dried her eyes and put on her best smile for him, smoothing her skirts nervously.
Leisha!
Leisha fell into his arms gratefully, knowing that this might be the last time they played out this little ritual.
Is everything all right? I heard there was some trouble at the market.
It's fine. I took care of it.
You take care of everyone in Cutter's Hollow, Leisha. I don't know what we'd do without you. Oh, now, now, none of that. Dry your eyes and head on inside. I'll check the wards and we can talk about what's bothering you over a bowl of your delicious stew.
Mom's still burning the food.
When it's not still moving.
That night, after the bowls were cleared from the dinner table, Leisha broached the subject.
I'm going to Angiers to study under one of Bruna's old apprentices.
I see. When?
As soon as Merrick leaves. Tomorrow.
No daughter of mine is spending a week on the open road with a messenger. I'll hire a caravan. It'll be safer.
I'll be careful of the demons, Dad.
It's not just the Corlings I'm worried about.
I can handle Messenger Merrick.
Keeping a man off you in the dark of night isn't the same as stopping a brawl in the market. You can't leave a messenger blind if you ever hope to make it off the road alive. Just a few weeks, I beg.
There's a child I'm needed to treat immediately.
Then I'll go with you.
You'll do no such thing, Ernie. Leisha needs to do this on her own.
Ernie looked at the old woman, and they locked stares and wills. But there was no will in Cutter's Hollow stronger than Bruna's, and Ernie soon looked away. Leisha walked her father out soon after. He did not want to go, nor did she want him to leave. But the sky was filled with color, and already he would have to trot to make it home safely.
How long will you be gone?
That will depend on how much Mistress Giselle has to teach, and how much the apprentice she's sending here, Vicka, has to learn. A couple of years, at least.
Well, I suppose if Bruna can do without you that long, I can too.
Promise me you'll check her wards while I'm gone.
Oh, of course.
I love you, Dad.
And I you, Puppet. I'll see you in the morning.
Your father makes a fair point.
Oh?
Messengers are men like any other.
Of that I have no doubt.
Young Master Merrick may be all charm and smiles now, but once you're on the road, he'll have his way, no matter what your wishes. And when you reach the forest fortress, herb gatherer or no, few will take the word of a young girl over that of a messenger.
He'll have what I give him, and nothing more.
Bruna's eyes narrowed, but she was satisfied that Leisha was wise to the danger. It was just after first light the next morning. Leisha found her mother standing there, though Elena had not come to the hut since being expelled at the end of Bruna's broom. Her face was a thunderhead as she pushed right past Leisha. On the sunny side of 40, Elena might still have been the most beautiful woman in the village, if not for her daughter. But being autumn to Leisha's summer had not humbled her. She might bow to Ernie with gritted teeth, but she carried herself like a duchess to all others.
Not enough you steal my daughter? Now you have to send her away?
Good morning to you as well, Mother.
Oh, you stay out of this. This witch has twisted your mind.
Leisha interposed herself between the two, just as Bruno was pushing her half-finished bowl away and wiping her sleeve across her mouth to retort.
Finish your breakfast. I'm going because I want to, Mother. And when I return, I'll bring healing the likes of which Cutter's Hollow has not seen since Bruna was young.
And how long will it take this time? You've already wasted your breeding years with your nose buried in dusted old books.
Mother, I'm barely 20.
Exactly. You should have 3 children by now, like your friend the Scarecrow. Instead, I watch as you pull babes from every womb in the village but your own.
At least she was wise enough not to shrivel hers with palm tea.
I told you to finish your porridge.
I'm not a broodmare, Mother. There's more in life for me than that.
What more? What could be more important?
I don't know, but I'll know when I find it.
And in the meantime, you leave the care of Cutter's Hollow to a girl you've never met and Ham Hand Darcy, who nearly killed Andy and a half a dozen since.
It's only for a few years, Mother. My whole life you called me useless, but now I'm supposed to believe the Hollow can't get on a few years without me?
What if something happens to you? What if you're caught on the road? What would I do?
What would you do? For 7 years, you've barely said a word to me, apart from pressing me to forgive Jared. You don't know anything about me anymore, Mother. You haven't bothered. So don't pretend now that my death would be some great loss to you. If you want Jared's child on your knee so badly, you'll have to bear it yourself.
I forbid it!
The days when your word carried weight with me are long past, Mother.
Elena looked scornfully at her daughter.
You'll be back one day, Leisha. Mark my words, and it will be much worse for you then.
I think it's time you left, Mother.
Leisha opened the door, just as Merrick was raising his hand to knock. Elena pushed past him, stomping down the path.
Apologies if I'm intruding. I came from Mistress Bruna's response. I'm bound for Angiers by mid-morning.
Leisha looked at Merrick. His jaw was bruised, but his thick tan hid it well, and the herbs she had applied to his split lip and eye had kept the swelling down.
You seem well recovered.
Quick healers go far in my line of work.
Well, then fetch your horse and return in an hour. I will deliver Bruna's response personally.
Merrick smiled widely.
It is good that you go. Cutter's Hollow holds no more challenges for you, and you're far too young to stagnate.
If you think that wasn't a challenge, then you weren't paying attention.
A challenge, perhaps, but the outcome was never in doubt. You've grown too strong for the likes of Elena.
Leisha gathered her bags, small and seemingly inadequate. A few dresses and books, some money, her herb pouch, a bedroll, and food. She left her pretties, the gifts her father had given her, and other possessions near to her heart. Messengers traveled light, and Merrick would not take well to having his horse overburdened. Bruna had said Giselle would provide for her during her training, but still, it seemed precious little to start a new life with.
A new life.
For all the stress of the idea, it brought excitement as well. Leisha had read every book in Bruna's collection, but Giselle had a great many more, and the other herb gatherers in Angiers, if they could be persuaded to share, held more still. But as the hour drew to a close, Leisha felt as if the breath were being squeezed from her.
Where's my father?
It's nearly time.
Leisha looked up and realized her eyes were wet.
We'd best say our goodbyes. Odds are we'll never have another chance.
Bruna, what are you saying?
Don't play the fool with me, girl. You know what I mean. I've lived my share twice over. But I'm not going to last forever.
Bruna, I don't have to go.
Oh, you've mastered all I can teach you, girl. So let these years be my last gift to you. Go! See and learn as much as you can.
Bruna held out her arms, and Leisha fell into them.
Just promise me that you'll look after my children when I'm gone. They can be stupid and willful, but there's good in them when the night is dark.
I will. And I'll make you proud.
You could never do otherwise.
I'm scared, Bruna.
You'd be a fool not to be. But I've seen a good piece of the world myself, and I've never seen a thing you couldn't handle.
Merrick led his horse up the path not long after. The messenger had a fresh spear in his hand, and his warded shield was slung over the horn of his saddle. If the pummeling he had taken the day before pained him in any way, he gave no sign.
Hi, Leisha! Ready to begin your adventure?
Adventure.
The word cut past sadness and fear, sending a thrill through her. Merrick took Leisha's bags, slinging them on top of his lean Angerian courser, as Leisha turned to Bruna one last time.
I'm too old for goodbyes that last half the day. Take care of yourself, girl.
The old woman pressed a pouch into her hands, and Leisha heard the clink of Milne's coin, worth a fortune in Angiers. Bruna turned and went inside before Leisha could protest. She pocketed the pouch quickly. The sight of metal coin this far from Milne could tempt any man, even a messenger. They walked on opposite sides of the horse down the path to town, where the main road led on to Angiers.
Father! Father!
There was no reply. Elena saw them pass and went inside. Leisha hung her head. She had been counting on seeing her father one last time. She thought of all the villagers she saw every day, and how she hadn't had time to part with them all properly. The letters she had left with Bruna seemed woefully inadequate. As they reached the center of town, though, Leisha gasped. Her father was waiting there, and behind him, lining the road, was the entire town. They went to her one by one as she passed, some kissing her and others pressing gifts into her hands.
Remember us well. Then you come back, sweetie.
Leisha hugged him tightly, squeezing her eyes shut to ward off tears.
The Hollowers love you.
Merrick spoke as they rode through the woods. Cutter's Hollow was hours behind them, and the day's shadows were growing long. Leisha sat before him on his courser's wide saddle, and the beast seemed to bear it and their baggage well.
There are times when I even believe it myself.
Why shouldn't you believe it? A beauty like the dawn who can cure all ills. I doubt any could help but love you.
A beauty like the dawn? Find the poor jongleur you stole that line from and tell him never to use it again.
You know, we never discussed my fee for escorting you.
I have money.
And so do I. I'm not interested in money.
Then what kind of price did you have in mind, Master Merrick? Is this another play for a kiss?
A kiss was the price to bring you a letter. Bringing you safely to Angiers will be much more expensive.
Merrick shifted his hips behind her, and his meaning was clear.
Always ahead of yourself. You'll be lucky to get the kiss at this rate.
We'll see.
They made camp soon after. Leisha prepared supper while Merrick set the wards. When the stew was ready, she crumbled a few extra herbs into Merrick's bowl before handing it to him.
Eat quick!
Merrick took the bowl, shoveling a large spoonful into his mouth.
You'll want to get in the tent before the Corlings rise. Seeing them up close can be scary.
Leisha looked over at the tent Merrick had pitched, barely big enough for one.
It's small, but we'll be able to warm each other in the chill of night.
It's summer.
Yet I still feel a cold breeze whenever you speak. Perhaps we can find a way to melt that. Besides, it's not as if you can go far.
He was stronger than her, and her struggles against him did as little good as her refusals. With the cries of Corlings as their backdrop, she suffered his kisses and pawing at her, hands fumbling and rough. And when his manhood failed him, she comforted him with soothing words, offering remedies of herb and root, which only worsened his condition. Sometimes he grew angry, and she was afraid he might strike her. Other times he wept, for what kind of man could not spread his seed? Leisha weathered it all, for the trial was not too high a price for passage to Angiers.
I'm saving him from himself.
For what man wished to be a rapist? But the truth was, she felt little remorse. She took no pleasure in using her skills to break his weapon, but deep down, there was a cold satisfaction, as if all her female ancestors throughout the untold ages since the first man who forced a woman to the ground were nodding in grim approval that she had unmanned him before he could unmaiden her. The days passed slowly, with Merrick's mood shifting from sour to spoiled as each night's failure mounted upon him. The last night, he drank deep from his wineskin and seemed ready to leap from the circle and let the demons have him. Her relief was palpable when Leisha saw the forest fortress spread out before them in the wood. She gasped at the sight of the high walls, their lacquered wards hard and strong, large enough to encompass Cutter's Hollow many times over. The streets of Angiers were covered with wood to prevent demons from rising inside. The entire city was a boardwalk. Merrick took her deep into the city and set her down outside Giselle's hospital. He gripped her arm as she turned to go, squeezing hard, hurting her.
What happened out beyond the walls stays out there.
I won't tell anyone.
See that you don't. Because if you do, I'll kill you.
I swear. Gatherer's word.
Beric released her, pulling hard on his courser's bridle and cantering off. A smile touched the corners of Leisha's mouth as she gathered her things and headed towards the hospit.
The Demon Cycle, Book 1, The Warded Man, Part 1, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2010, Peter V. Brett, all rights reserved. Recorded with the permission of the author. Production copyright 2011 by The Cutting Corporation, Incorporated, all rights reserved. With performances by Kimberly Gilbert, Nanette Savard, Thomas Keegan, Yasmin Toison, Nick DePinto, Eric Messner, Joe Brack, Richard Rowan, Steve Carpenter, Mort Shelby, MJ Casey, Lily Beacon, Katie Karkoff, Colleen Delaney, Alyssa Wilmoth, Margie Tompros, Ken Jackson, Karen Novak, Ren Casey, Christopher Graybill, Michael Glenn, Terrence Aselford, Dylan Lynch, Elizabeth Jernigan, Bradley Smith, Thomas Penny, Drew Kopis, Casey Platt, Christopher Sheeran, James Konacek, Alexander Strain, Tim Carlin, and James Lewis. Adapted and directed by Johan Detweiler. Produced by Richard Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johan Detweiler. If you enjoyed The Demon Cycle, be sure to look for Brent Week's Night Angel Trilogy and Brandon Sanderson's Elantris and Warbreaker. Available now in graphic audio at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. Keep listening for exciting previews of other graphic audio material. Available now in graphic audio. The war between Dante Valentine and the devil has been building.
Hey, Blondie, you two-faced lying sack of demon shit. You've got business with me first.
Indeed, I do.
Now, all will be settled in one epic final confrontation.
Here I stand, Lucifer, and not all the hosts of hell shall move me.
Not all the hosts of hell are necessary, Necromans.
Just one.
Dante Valentine number 5, To Hell and Back. The thrilling conclusion to the Dante Valentine series.
There is more than one way to break a human.
Rogue Angel 28, Restless Soul.
War is always the same. It is young men dying in the fullness of their promise. It is trying to kill a man that you do not even know well enough to hate. Therefore, to know war is to know that there is still madness in this world.
Madness! Madness! Hold on! They will kill us!
Shut up!
We will die! We will die!
Everyone dies, but I won't let us die today.
Underground rivers in these mountains. Maybe they are rising because God needs to wash away still more dirt.
Free me!
Free me!
Up! This is flooding! Anya, Sakharat, come on, move!
Lou, did you hear?
Anya, now! We have to get out of here!
Since you intend to kill me anyway, why not tell me what this is all about? Where did all of the gold come from?
And where is it going?
Yes.
I told you I was educated in America. I grew up on James Bond films. All the villains reveal their plans, lording it over James Bond, who was trussed up to some torture device. He always escaped.
You worry that I'll escape? You've got a gun on me.
I am not a James Bond villain. I am not a villain at all. Just a businessman, an opportunist, who made fortunate alliances so he could make a fortune. I do not need to explain my plans to an archaeologist who stars in a silly television program. And no, I do not worry that you will escape. Now tell me, Anya Creed, where did you go yesterday? Who did you talk to? And where is Lou Ardo?
He's beyond your reach.
God damn you! Where is Lou Ardo? Who have you told about this place? I'll let you live if you cooperate, Anya Creed.
I give up.
No.
Don't shoot anyone. It's me you want.
Dear God, no!
In graphic audio. If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.